Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. And because it is that destination, we are going to be focusing on how African business has been affected by the ongoing COVID-19 crisis. Coronavirus has really been putting global markets into a tailspin, lots of headwinds to contend with. And on the line, we are joined by Neville Mandimika, who is an economist and fixed income strategist at Rand Merchant Bank, to help us to perhaps go through some of the issues, unpack how the African economies have been affected by COVID-19, and perhaps get a sense of what all of it means. Neville, how are you?
I'm all right. All things considered, I think I'm holding up well.
All things considered, I think the last conversation we had with Neville was almost exactly 2 months ago, and it was in studio. And right now everything is happening remotely as testament to how COVID-19 has really changed and affected our lives. For other, countries, for countries across Africa, Neville, what are some of the effects? What are the impacts? What are some of the ways in which everything that's going on is affecting African economies and could affect African economies?
Well, I would actually take a step back and say we have to be appreciative of the transmission mechanism in which Africa is being affected and will continue to be affected from this crisis or pandemic that we are in at the moment. And there are several ways. So first and foremost, I think through financial markets. I mean, we've seen in this part of the world, the rand, losing value quite aggressively. We've seen some other currencies across the continent doing the same thing. And that is predominantly through financial markets, as investors obviously want to hold safe haven assets like the US dollar, hence the currency weakness that we've seen across the spectrum. But there's also a second and possibly a third wave to this, which is obviously the humanitarian crisis that decimates the productive capacity of the labor force. So right now, here in South Africa, in Nigeria, et cetera, we are seeing countrywide lockdowns. And that, in effect, reduces the productive capacity of the labor force, which in turn is obviously going to affect economic growth and economic performance. And then we've got, other transmission mechanism channels, such as through tourism. We're obviously not going to get a lot more. We're not going to get tourist receipts across the continent as a result of the lockdown that we've seen. And of course, issues such as commodity prices. So there are various methods and transmission mechanisms that Africa is getting hit at the same time.
Neville, one of the things that I think our listeners might appreciate your insight on is, what do the lockdowns look like, I guess, in some of the countries that you are looking at on a day-to-day basis? I think for many South Africans, there's a tendency to perhaps just look at what's going on in South Africa, what's going on, the daily updates from the Minister of Health, the cases in South Africa, where is it going, the extension, all that. But outside of South Africa and the rest of the continent, how have other governments, I guess, gone about structuring their lockdowns, and how does that compare to how South Africa has gone about it from a policy point of view?
Well, I'll start off with from an information point of view, which is very critical in terms of obviously lowering anxiety. Here in South Africa, we obviously get daily updates, and we're seeing that similarly across the African countries, where on a day-to-day basis, from the various ministries of health or from the stats agencies, we get infection, death, and sort of recovery numbers. So which is quite comforting, because we're almost getting a real-time account of how the virus is spreading. And that allows us to form a fairly accurate picture of where we are within the spectrum of this particular crisis, and also in relation to other countries. So I think SA, compared to some of the other countries, I think we are almost on par in terms of how other countries are reporting. But where things differ slightly is how the lockdowns, if they are in certain countries, how these are being affected. So here we've got a countrywide lockdown where you're obviously not allowed to leave your gate, for example. But in other countries, and I'll pick on Nigeria, for example, it's only, to my knowledge, it's only Abuja and Lagos that has been shut down completely. So some of the other states or counties have actually have got greater freedom of movement. And then you've got some other countries where there is a lockdown in principle, but you're still seeing, you know, quite a large degree of movement of people from one place to the other. So the term lockdown, I think, varies quite differently from country to country and obviously severity to severity. But I think one thing that we can say is fairly common across the continent is that there is a continent-wide understanding that measures around social distancing or physical distancing is particularly critical in terms of steering the or flattening the curve, as it were, across the continent.
And then with that in mind, because I really like the fact that you do highlight some of the differences that are there, because just in my own understanding, governments have gone about this thing in slightly different ways. And I think South Africa is one of the more strict countries in the way that they've implemented their lockdown. Looking, I guess, at the economic indicators, in South Africa, we've been seeing ever declining growth projections for the different economies. I think 4 weeks ago, we started out at 0.2%, and then it went down to -1, then -2, and then after that, it was -4.9. And now you have the Reserve Bank talking -6% in South Africa. Have you seen a similar trend with how growth projections have been, I guess, given in other countries? I think it was one of the things you highlighted when you were talking about those transmission mechanisms.
Yeah, undoubtedly so. I mean, when we released our monthly macroeconomic report at the end of March, I mean, we made also revisions across multiple countries that we track in different parts of the continent. And one thing was common across all. There was a significant reduction in terms of growth forecast for 2020 and into 2021, with some countries, a lot of them, entering into recession in 2020. That's our projection. Some countries are a little bit better off than others. So amongst the countries that we look at, the likes of Kenya and Ghana stand out for us with respect to that they're going to be registering some form of growth, albeit very small, but there is going to be some level of growth. And some countries, you know, like Nigeria, Zambia, etc., are going to be registering recessions that are close to about 4% in 2020. So it shows you that there is going to be a significant compression in terms of economic activity in 2020.
And then on the currency front, how is that looking?
Don't get me started, Mdio. It's been a nightmare, to say the least. So we've seen quite a number of currencies. South African rand, as you mentioned, I mean, we're edging ever so close to that 19 mark again. We're seeing that the Zambian kwacha has weakened quite aggressively. We've seen that the Nigerian naira has also weakened or devalued quite sharply. And all of that is reflective of the sort of global risk-off environment where investors are looking to hold on to safe haven currencies like the US in this current environment. So if you look at the spot rates across the African continent, you may not see this level of pressure in terms of the sentiments that I've expressed just recently. And I think it's partly to do with the fact that a lot of African currencies are managed. So if you think about, say, for example, the Nigerian naira, okay, we've seen it, move ever so slightly upwards or weaken against the US dollar. But that doesn't mean that there's no pressure on the currency. If you look at other indicators like where the para market rate is trading or where the offshore non-deliverable forward market is trading, that shows you that there's quite a significant amount of pressure on that particular currency. So what effectively I'm saying is that central banks are doing everything that they can to try and preserve the value of their currency in order to protect the livelihoods of their citizens. But the interesting thing is the longer we stay in this sort of crisis period, the less likely that a lot of central banks will be able to manage their or keep their currencies at current levels. So it's going to be a matter of time if we extend in terms of this particular crisis over a multi-month period, we might see a lot more currency volatility and currency moves. So it's important to keep that at the back of your mind if you're an SA corporate, for example, because that necessitates a lot more the need to hedge your FX exposure, for instance.
I guess on that front, where you were talking about multi-month scenario, what type of planning are you guys sort of doing? Because I'm sure you've run a number of different models. There's some thinking that by the end of April in South Africa, we'll be done with the lockdown. But you have different countries at different levels of lockdown, as you highlighted earlier on. But at the same time, you're hearing in the West, countries like the United States, that people, some companies are planning that this is a 6 to 8 week, process that people need to go through. Sort of, where are you guys sort of seeing the timelines for this thing? Because just the way that things are going now, it doesn't seem that likely that end of April we would have averted the crisis as a whole.
Well, let me start off by saying that no one knows, right? There is no economic model out there that is able to tell you with any degree of certainty when we're going to go back to normal, because this is effectively a novel crisis, right, as we're talking about. So, you know, when dealing with black swan events, which this is, it's very difficult to come up with any degree of accuracy. But with what we are seeing in terms of, the rate of new infections in China, for example, or in Italy, that is starting to show some signs of containing the virus, I think it's safe to assume that we are effectively going to be getting into a phase where countries have become a lot more adept at managing this crisis. Obviously, testing is something that has been put at the forefront of policy making and the health crisis response. So I think we are in this environment where we're starting to get a pretty good picture of how pervasive this particular crisis is. And that gives us a little bit of comfort in the sense that if you look at financial market reaction, right, a lot of the moves that we saw, particularly from mid-February, was driven by fear and panic because we didn't know. But now that we're in this environment where we're starting to get a little bit of color, we're starting to see a little bit of rational trading, in a sense, coming back to the market. So that's a fairly positive sign. In terms of our base case scenario, we're sort of estimating that in the second half of this year, we might start to see a lot more economies opening up their countries or lifting the lockdowns, as it were, and allowing some form of travel or international trade. But I must caution, though, that it's important to keep it in the back of your mind that in the absence of a cure some sort of vaccination or preventative measure, it's very difficult to imagine a scenario where we go back to where we were this time last year. So I think it's going to be a fairly challenging months ahead, if not years, as we grapple with the reality of this, because the world as we know it has effectively changed. And I think it's important to appreciate that.
And then the other thing that you sort of spoke about, you touched on just now when you were highlighting the currency issues, was that for some corporates, there are considerations around currency exposure. But as this crisis has evolved since, I'd say, the end of February until where we are now, the concerns of corporates that do have operations in Africa or are looking or perhaps looking to expand into Africa, how have you seen concerns change, or what are some of the issues that corporates are, I guess, looking at the moment in terms of hedging their risks in light of COVID-19?
The conversation that we've had, particularly amongst SA corporates, is that they're effectively in crisis mode, in the sense that companies are looking at the exposure across the continent and asking several pertinent questions. So first and foremost, if you've got exposure to Egypt or Nigeria or Kenya or whatever it is, the first and important question is, number one, where is the currency going to go? And secondly, would I be able to get my money out of the country if I need to repatriate dividends, for example, back into SA? And again, I think that each country has got its own nuance and dynamics in terms of how they're dealing with the FX issue. Some countries better than others. But I think across the continent, that is the critical question that we're hearing from the corporates. And some are even asking very important questions, like should we even be, you know, should we consider shutting down our operations in certain countries in light of this gloomy sort of macroeconomic picture that we're painting. But I guess I think, you know, with each country, we have to look at it on a case-by-case basis and come up with that answer. But by and large, those are the questions that we're facing.
Okay. Oh, it just seems like such a dire situation at the moment. But there was some hope that you highlighted earlier, and I want to come back to that to perhaps understand. If I'm getting it correctly from what you said, you've got countries like, I think you said Ghana and Kenya, that you said from your models will likely register some type of growth, albeit very small growth, but growth nonetheless. What are those countries doing? You know, what are they getting right, but rather what do they have going for them at the moment?
Well, I think the critical thing here is the shape of the economy prior to the crisis, right? So here again is a reference in South Africa. Before we entered into this crisis, we're talking about sub 1% growth. So that wasn't a very good footing to get into a crisis. But the likes of your Kenya, Ghana, Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire, Egypt, for instance, they got into this crisis with growth rates in excess of 5.2%. So that immediately gives them some fat in terms of economic growth contraction and how they sort of come through this particular crisis. So that's one aspect. The second aspect is the state of the finances getting into this crisis, right? So countries that were overspending or with significantly high or deep fiscal deficits obviously have got a lot less firepower in terms of deploying revenue for health purposes or humanitarian purposes. So I think that's a critical measure as well, i.e. the fiscal room to be able to deal with this particular crisis. And also the central bank activity. I mean, we're always talking about monetary policy being complementary to fiscal policy. It's also important to realize that the real rates, i.e. the monetary policy level minus inflation, I think that's a very good indicator in terms of how much their respective central banks can cut rates in order to stimulate or to give some cushion in terms of their consumers. So along that spectrum, you know, some countries were better off. And this is why I singled out Ghana and Kenya, because on those metrics, I think they're looking a little bit better. But of course, there is the IMF factor here, where they've effectively pledged quite significant sums of money to African countries that are obviously in very bad shape. We've seen that in terms of facilities such as the rapid credit facility or the rapid financing instruments that typically have got a very small turnaround time in terms of approval for funding and deployment of cash. So there's a perfect case in point. We saw Ghana 2 days ago. They've got approved $1 billion to their coffers that they're going to be using for balance of payments, crisis management, as well as the humanitarian efforts that they're undertaking at the stage. So I think that particular spectrum of issues then determine which countries come out on the other side looking a little bit better than others.
Okay. So as we end off, we've talked a lot about where the currencies are going, some of the considerations for the corporates. But I thought as a parting shot, it would be valuable to get your thoughts on how the different governments have gone about reacting, at least from an economic point of view, to the crisis. In South Africa, we've seen a 2.25% being cut from interest rates, together with some stimulus coming into the economy. How would you say, you know, people have done in other economies, and is it enough?
I would say that across the continent, the first efforts that we saw was around central bank moves. So the likes of Egypt, I think they cut in one sitting 300 basis points. So here in SA, we're talking about 225 spaced out over a couple of sittings. They did that in one sitting. We've seen the likes of Ghana in emergency meetings. They've also cut rates, similar thing in Lesotho. We've seen a similar move in Kenya as well. So the first line of response was always the monetary policy angle. And then now what we're seeing across the continent is that there's a lot of revisions in terms of budget assumptions across across different countries. So we've seen a similar move in Ghana. We've seen most notably in Nigeria, where they revised their oil price assumptions, their revenue assumptions, etc. And I think that's the next wave in terms of how much fiscal room or fiscal spending there is available to actually fight this particular crisis. Then, of course, the lockdowns, which a lot of countries have enacted. So I think broadly, that's what we've seen in terms of the reaction. What gives me a little bit of comfort and hope, though, is that across the continent, we're starting to see significant efforts of testing being instituted across the continent. So I think that gives me a little bit of comfort that once we start to get a lot more numbers, because there was always the issue of whether, you know, the low infection rates that we're seeing in Africa is truly low or is it just underreported. So I think as we get a lot more color and detail around infection rates and testing and all of that, then we start to get a clearer picture as to the severity of this particular crisis across the continent. So I think broadly speaking, that's what we've seen. We've seen monetary policy, fiscal policy, and of course, countrywide lockdowns in different forms.
As a follow-up to what you've just said, how much of an impact has the oil price had on African economies and their planning? I think in a country like South Africa, it's very easy to say that a lower oil price equals lower petrol prices at the pump, which did happen a few weeks ago. But if MTN is anything to go by, there is some type of impact for countries that do have countries that have an exposure to oil or companies that have an exposure to oil producing countries. So what has oil done, that those swings in the oil price, what have they actually done in the last couple of months?
I think it's a tale of two cities, right? So you've got the likes of export oil exporters. So your Nigerias, your Angolas, your Gabons, etc. They're obviously feeling the pinch in terms of revenues that are coming through into their fiscus on the back of the low oil prices that we're seeing. So that hurts the economies quite significantly. And then you've got the large oil importers, right? So the likes of Kenya, for example, who effectively will be smiling at this stage because obviously the pump price, as determined by their respective formulas, will be much lower. But that may not necessarily translate into significant consumer savings in the sense that at this stage with lockdowns, I mean, you're really not going to feel the benefit of a lower oil price. So in the case of SA, last week you mentioned that the pump price went down, but, you know, in the middle of a lockdown, what good is that to you, right, as a consumer? So I think that's the effect that we're seeing. But in terms of the actual dynamic of the oil price, international oil prices, I think that is determined by two factors. Number one, the fact that there is very little demand for physical oil, given that everyone or almost everyone is in lockdown. And also the fact that there is a geopolitical angle here between Saudi Arabia and Russia that is obviously affecting the sentiment within the oil prices. So I think that then becomes a dynamic that we need to be quite cognizant of, that even though we might get some resumption or some increase in physical demand for oil, maybe into the second half of this year, as we start to see lockdown restrictions being lifted, we must also contend with the fact that there's a geopolitical angle here between Saudi Arabia and Russia. And of course, the OPEC Plus members, in terms of the deal that they recently reached of cutting 10 billion barrels a day from the global supply, then becomes very pertinent in terms of where oil prices go from here on in. So, I think African countries are getting affected differently depending on whether you're importer or exporter, and also the global dynamic in terms of oil prices then becomes a very key consideration or point of discussion.
Mm. Very interesting discussion coming through from Neville Mandimika, who is an economist and fixed income strategist at Rand Merchant Bank. A lot of the outlook is quite bleak from what he's saying, because there's a lot of transmission in terms of negative impacts for the African economies. But there are some glimmers of hope. He's saying that in certain parts of Africa, like Kenya and Ghana, where they started off the year pre-COVID with good projections for growth, that the contraction will still result in growth in those economies, albeit smaller growth, but growth nonetheless, and that South Africa has suffered from already having been in a somewhat tricky position before entering into the COVID crisis. He's also just talking about the fact that at the moment, the currency stories, a lot of tailspins on that end, especially if the crisis is to continue. And he says that no economic model is going to let anyone know how long this crisis is going to last for, that it will all depend on finding that vaccine or finding that cure, but that it's been good to see how the different countries have actually ramped up testing for COVID-19 across the various countries. So thank you so much, Neville. How can people get in touch with you, perhaps on social media, if they want to engage?
First and foremost, through our email address, or research@rmb.co.za, and we'll be able to assist from a research perspective. And on social media platforms, I mean, they can look out for us at Rand Merchant Bank.
Okay, cool.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Fascinating discussion coming through there with the Neville. I definitely think it was important for us to just have a look at what's going on outside of South Africa, because there is that tendency to just sort of concentrate and become have blinders just on what else is going on, because by South Africa having its borders locked, for example, that has a big impact on the rest of the continent, because South Africa is that gateway into Africa. That's on the one front. The other front is just the fact that with South Africa having the most cases on the continent, it does feed into how the policy interventions and policy responses have gone about, especially being formulated and implemented. So it's good to hear how other African central banks, policymakers have been going about it. And also just that impact, especially that oil price and the currency effects. That fact that some of the currencies are managed, I think it's quite an important one to consider. South Africa has one of the more liquid currencies in the emerging market space. So, you know, some of those considerations are completely different. The other one is just to think about how the different peaks will affect economic activity in those countries. Because, yeah, sure, we have lockdown now, but as different countries reach that peak, peak infection rates and stuff like that, how is that going to feed into the economic case and some of the other indicators? The other interesting one to me has been that 100 basis point cut by the South African Reserve Bank earlier this week. 225 basis points is a lot when you consider what the SARB has been doing. And we wait to see our other central banks going to sort of follow suit, because as Neville said, there was that initial wave of central bank activity to sort of help ease the burden of COVID-19. Does the central bank cutting interest rates this week mean we might see another wave of central bank activity across the continent? Who knows? But for now, we just wait to see what's going to happen. And we hope that the African economy is going to be able to really get on board with the recovery. And we'll have more countries like Ghana, like Kenya, that will see some economic growth in 2020. So that's been it for today's edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. Remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.